Hi, and welcome to a new series of Let's Make a Difference podcasts. Now, this is an interesting topic that I've been thinking about for a while. It's about people that have left employment to start their own business. Now, I've always thought this was very brave, but equally very scary. So I wanted to talk to a few people that have been there and done it. So let's see how we get on. In my third episode, I've got Matthew Grosset, who used to work with me many years ago at a business and has now started his own business. But I warn you, it's very, very different to what we used to do. Let's hear what Matthew has to say. Right, I've got Matthew Grosset joining me. Matthew, how are you?
I'm good, thanks, man. How are you?
Yeah, good, good. So for context, I met Matthew in a very corporate job. We were both working at HS2, High Speed 2, which is obviously very a very controversial.
How's it controversial?
Well, a slightly controversial political project. But I'm in defense for me and Matthew, we were fairly young and they employed us and gave us a job and paid us some money. So why would we not do it? But then we both left around the same time and there was redundancies and stuff like that. But Matthew, I just want to take you back to kind of your kind of career, education rather. And you know, when people used to ask that question, what do you want to be when you grow up?
Yeah.
When you were quite young, what did you used to say?
Well, the youngest thing I can think of, I remember telling people I wanted to be when I was growing up, was an ice cream man.
So, I used to say that too. It's unbelievable. Because I like the van, I like the music, and I quite like the cone and the flake.
Ice cream. So I was just like, yeah, this is perfect. But then when I got a bit older and I was a bit more understanding, I was like, that's not really probably the best career path at the time. I probably could go now. I used to love watching Law and Order. So criminology was what I did. I was going to do a criminal psychology. And then go into forensic psychology and basically, do that with the police. But, after doing it I went to uni, I did criminology and sociology as an undergrad. And then I was going to do my master's in psychology and then conversion course into forensic psychology. But after doing the first 3 years, I was like, I don't know if I enjoy this enough to do another 2 years of this. And so I stopped.
Yeah, I mean, I we're actually very similar. I used to love cop shows and stuff like that as well. So it's kind of like I always thought, wanted to. And that's funny enough, I'm doing a series of this, so people that are listening might have heard. Depends on what order I put them out in. But there was a guy who's a mortgage advisor now, but he just wanted to be a copper and he did it for a couple of years in CID and basically just did it, but then thought, actually, this isn't for me and left, which is quite ironic. But but I guess. Sort of moving on then, I think the bits that I really want to focus on is obviously when I met you were doing a completely different role, but I could see the passion for what you're doing now. So if you just tell me a little bit about what you were doing at HS2.
So at HS2 I was the digital communications manager. I think in any other role that would have been a bit more pizzazz, but at HS2 essentially was the best way to describe me is it's the website manager, making sure the content was there, making sure it was up to date, and making sure it's all legible, making sure it's all legal. and they just make it as engaging as possible. Obviously, you came in as the social media manager. So we worked closely in that kind of way. But that was the general gist of my job, was just making sure that our online channels, aside from social media, were working as well as possible.
It wasn't a very creative role because of the government side of it and stuff. It was kind of pretty dull, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was incredibly dull. And I think, to the credit of our manager, who I won't name on here because I don't know what the deal is, but to the credit of our manager, Andrew's good. He tried to make it as fun as possible and tried to make it as crazy as possible, but within the confines of what we were asked to deliver and what we were allowed to tiptoe around, it was engaging, but it wasn't exciting.
So Now let's talk about your real passion. And I remember, so when I joined, you had obviously been there a long time before me, a couple of years at least.
Yeah.
When I joined, I remember it was, and this is obviously pre-COVID and stuff. And actually, to be fair, HS2 were quite hybrid and quite flexi working, actually.
They were super flexi working.
Yeah, like one of the first companies I'd ever even, because I'd come from somewhere in Network Rail where I was 5 days in the office. And the fact that you could work from home once a week and you know, be a little bit like being later or being finished earlier. It was quite refreshing, to be honest. It was the first time.
I mean, to be honest, I think that probably was just our team.
maybe. I mean, yeah, to be honest, now I think of it, everyone was always in. It was me.
That was
it was just us who were in and out. Yeah, okay, fine. Well, I thought when I was at home, everyone was at home, but maybe not. Actually, I don't know. But anyway, the fact that it was allowed was something. But I remember it was the first couple of weeks in, and it was a Wednesday, and you weren't in, and I was just like, oh, I wonder where he is. And then you came in, and I was like, oh, you know, you're at the gym, or you know, I'm just curious. And you said, no, I go and deliver cakes to Barclays on every Wednesday. And I was like, all right, cakes. I was like, that's a bit random.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about that, how that kind of stuff came. Forget the business, but just that passion for cake making.
The passion for cake, you know what? So I have a really ridiculous sweet tooth, and I think I've always had it. I've got an older brother, and then I've got two younger sisters. And my older brother's 4 years older than me. And in our house growing up, there was a sweets cupboard. And the sweets cupboard was on the lower level of the kitchen just because my brother didn't really eat sweets. So my parents didn't think that they'd have to move it. When I came along, they eventually moved that sweets cupboard to the top shelf. And I figured I had to climb up there. And then they moved that sweet shelf to the conservatory in an even higher top shelf. I figured I had to get in there. And then they eventually had to lock that cupboard with a padlock. And I found the key, and I got in there as well. So I'm determined to get sweets whenever I can. And to be honest, that's kind of just translated throughout my life. I like food. I like different flavors. And the best way of getting different flavors out there and getting people to try things is through sweets. Sweets are kind of fairly universal. I did a talk at a school last year, just talking about my career in general, actually. Mm-hmm. And they were asking, oh, what really got you into it? And aside from the story I just told you, I'm also massively into anime, and I know it sounds really sad and nerdy, but as a 36, as a 36-year-old man, I'm still massively into it. And in particular, food anime. Food looks really good in animation, and I just love the way it looks. Also, like the amount of like sweets that they can do, like kind of Parisian-style stuff, like Japanese in particular have a really good way of taking pastries and sweets and making, putting their own like really precise twist on them. Asian sweets in general, just really good. A lot of Caribbean stuff that works with like a lot of exotic foods and stuff. Just stuff that people wouldn't really have had. I mean, I like doing things that you can't get everywhere, just to see if it works. Yeah.
And then, so I mean, was that Barclays the cake thing? Was that one of your first? I mean, how did you start? So you're working at just.
I was working at just two, and essentially, funny enough, actually, the lady who was doing your role before you, a lady called Julie, she was working as a consultant for us, but she was also following this other company. I don't think they exist anymore, but the lady who used to run it, I still talk to her, I still go on LinkedIn, this company called Lady Geeks, that was it. And essentially, Lady Geeks was like an advocate group for like getting women into tech and making sure that there's a equality, gender equality and stuff in tech like in digital, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And they'd put out a tweet saying, we need some brownies made. I think this was, must have been like a Monday. They said, we need some brownies made for Thursday. And Julie had been following them. She says, Matthew, you can do this, because at the time I'd been baking and bringing in stuff and that. And so she'd already tweeted them saying, oh, I know someone here, get in contact with him. And I was like, oh, okay.
So just to be clear, that you never did it professionally. You just
used No. That was just me.
Like people do.
Yeah. I was working at home and like, I was working at HS2 at the time. I wasn't doing it professionally. I was just baking because I enjoyed baking.
Yeah.
The odd time someone might ask me to make a birthday cake, but like it wasn't as a job. It's just because I enjoy baking.
Yeah.
I ended up responding. They ended up reaching out to me. And they said, could I make some brownies? I think it was like about maybe like 30 brownies, which considering I don't do it
quite a lot. Like, yeah,
quite a lot. Yeah. I had to go buy some brownie tins because I don't have any brownies. So I went to go buy all this stuff, and I'm still just living at home with my parents as well. And so I bought all this stuff, and I'm like baking into the night. And when they say, "Oh, can you come deliver?" So I had to again ask manager Andrew, "Oh, can I go deliver these brownies?" It's just down in Westminster. It's very quick. He goes, "Yeah, it's fine," because at the time we were in Victoria. Yeah. So I thought, okay, fine. I'll go deliver these brownies. I'll meet them at Westminster Station, and I'll just turn around and come back. It turned out actually that those brownies were going to Parliament. Because, and I didn't know, so they had the first of three events going on there where they were like basically lobbying for, again, equality in digital services. And so I handed them over to the lady. She's like, "Oh, this is great. Thank you so much." And I was really chuffed. I was like, "Oh, that's great. They paid me," and I was happy. About maybe 4 hours later, I got another email from them, and I think I said, "Oh God, they didn't like him or something like that."
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
That's great.
Or something like David Cameron's got food poisoning. Or something
basically,
like that.
Oh, I mean, that would have been awful.
He would have been in Parliament, I think. But,
oh,
yeah.
No, I'm so sorry about that. About 4 hours later, I got an email from them. And I was like, "Oh, Jesus, okay, what's going on?" And it's like, "Oh, those were amazing. Can we get another?" I think it was like another 100 or 100 or 80 or something like that.
Whoa.
Which is obviously, I was like, "Okay, that's fine. I can figure out this. Can we get another 100 for Friday?" Bear in mind, it's Wednesday now, and I can't really keep taking time off work because I am working.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Did you have like the logistical ovens and just...
No, I had a normal oven that you have
at home, right? That we all have.
Yeah, just a normal oven. I only had one mixing bowl. I didn't have any of this kind of stuff. I literally was doing everything just fun. So I said yes. I was like, "You know what? Yeah, I'll say yes. And I'll figure out how to do it later."
Mm.
Not to be really cheesy and like a sudden cutting into the story now, but I remember seeing a quote from Richard Branson saying that if you get offered a really good opportunity and you don't know how to do it, just say yes and figure out how to do it on the way. So I was like, "Yeah, you know what? I just said yes." So I managed to do it. I managed to turn it around. And after that, the lady
worked through the night a little bit to do this.
I had to work through the night a lot. I'd woke up in the morning because it was 2 days afterwards. So basically, I baked the first batch, then I fell asleep and baked the second batch the next day as well. And then, I delivered them to Parliament again, and it was again this one. It was the end of their
even just week. Delivering logistics would have been quite hard, right? You're just carrying them in the tube,
just carrying them in a bag in a modest bag for life in a big box. And thank God that we. I remember I was getting the boxes from Paper Chase, and it was so expensive. but thank God that we were just in Victoria, because if we'd been anywhere else in London, it'd been really difficult to do. But yeah, luckily it was just in Victoria, so it was like just down the road. But I finished that. And then after the lady who was the CEO was like, "That was really impressive. Thank you so much. We've got an office in, I can't remember exactly where it is, but basically the stop after Camden is if you're going to High Barnet on the tube, and I can't remember what it's called. Kentish Town. Kentish Town. And so basically we'd like you to bring us cakes once a week every Wednesday. And I was like, "Oh, okay, fine. Just so you know, I do have, I've got a job as well. I'm not just at home doing this." And like, "Oh, okay, fine, that's fine, yeah. I mean, yeah, if you can do it." I was like, "Yeah, okay, let's figure it out." So I asked Andrew, "Do you mind every Wednesday at lunchtime, can I take an extra half an hour just to get up and get back?" And he was chill about it. So sometimes I just stayed a bit late on Wednesday, and sometimes I worked earlier in the morning. But
In that time, that's fascinating, sorry about that. But in that time, did you kind of think, "I can see a career in this," or did you always think it's always going to be just on the side? And I'm just,
you know, I never really, I think maybe because I didn't really see what I was doing at HS2 as an actual career, because I don't know, maybe because I've been doing it for so long, it wasn't particularly difficult, and it wasn't really my passion either. So it was more that I didn't really have anything I was massively interested in. Obviously, I enjoyed making the cakes and stuff like that, but I assumed that in the future I'd have a cake shop, like when I'm 60 and I'm going to retire down by the sea, I'd open a cake shop then. I didn't think that I was going to do that now. I did see a career in it in some kind of way, but it was more like I'm old and I've got nothing else to do and I want to do this before I pass away kind of thing, not like, let's do it in my 30s.
Yeah. And did you have any... Was there anyone you looked up to for inspiration around baking or?
Heston Blumenthal. He's not a baker per se, but he's like a really cool chef. And again, it's just the random flavors he comes up with. Like, he made snail porridge, which sounds horrendous, but the idea that you can think outside the box. Like, we're gonna make a porridge. And we're gonna infuse it with like escargot and a little bit of caviar, and have like an oxtail smoked over the top of it. Not the actual oxtail, just the smoke of it. I was like, this is wizardry. Like, how have you done this? So whenever we used to do anything, I think he did a whole like edible dessert table. So everything on the table was edible. Like the knives and forks were edible. They're all made out of sweet. It was very cool. Like the trellis you'd put on the table, the piece of paper that was edible paper. Everything was edible. And it's like, this is incredible. Like, so that's the kind of stuff I love seeing. That's the kind of stuff that really inspires me. Yeah.
Mm. And then fast forward to kind of sort of back end of HS2, and you kind of word of mouth, I guess, had got a couple of other, because as I said, Barclays you used to deliver to and stuff sometimes.
So funny enough, actually, again, it was actually just mostly through that Lady Geeks company. The lady who ran it had some really, really good connections. And I remember one of the most eye-opening things that ever happened to me through them is that they asked me to deliver some loaf cakes for Christmas. They're basically their Christmas thank you thing to all of their donors and supporters. And they sent me a list of people's actual addresses, their actual houses, the CEOs of all these companies.
Oh, wow.
And so there's me. I don't drive at this point either. So there's me on the train and just traveling around. And there was either the CEO of Barclays or maybe the deputy CEO or
someone senior
in Barclays, basically. And they're like, okay, well, can you go deliver this loaf cake to their house? Now, you know where the V&A Museum is in London?
Yeah.
Their house was opposite.
Oh, wow.
And I've never felt so poor in my entire life. They opened the door, which I'm assuming was either the butler or the house help or something like that. Opened the door. And you know those townhouses where they're like, they look like Notting Hill Castle.
They're
very small, but they're very like crammed up together. And they always face like a gated park kind of thing.
Yeah. So
I always assumed that each one of those houses was a house. When they opened the door for this house, I got to see inside. It's actually knocked through on the inside. So those three houses that are together, they're all one house, and it's gigantic. The middle of the house had a banister, you know, like Annie, the banister coming down and swirling round. And whoever opened the door, it definitely wasn't the person who owned the house. It was like their help or like maybe the driver. Yeah. They're like, oh, can I help you? I was like, I have a cake for Mr. So-and-so. And he took it. And I was like, my hair wasn't combed. I was wearing an awful jacket. I was so tired. I looked like some kind of like urchin off the street. And I'm surprised he didn't like just call the police immediately on me, like, there's a pauper on the street. That was fun. That was good.
But so, yeah, we kind of fast forward to kind of end of HS2, and you're sort of, you know, you've got now a few word of mouth people, and you've got a couple of things and stuff. And then obviously you got an opportunity, because it happened to us all when I mentioned it at the start of the pod, but we got made redundant and stuff. Was it quite an easy decision for you to think, okay, I'm not going to go and find another website role. I'm going to start my own company.
Absolutely. I didn't, as I said before, I didn't really, digital was fine and I could do it. But because I'd been at HS2 for so long, I think I enjoyed being at HS2 because it was easy rather than actually doing the role itself.
Like, and the people and social, stuff, the team were good and stuff. The team were good. And
exactly, the team were good. I mean, like, slightly different to you, I guess, because you actually, you're good at social media and that's what you've trained to do.
Yeah.
Whereas I hadn't trained to do digital, it's just that I could do it. So me leaving there and going to do another role in digital when I didn't really have the passion for it in the first place didn't really seem like something. I didn't feel like I'd lost it. Obviously missed the money because it was nice getting obviously having a job at the same time.
But did HS2, do you think without the redundancy, because obviously you get funds when you get made redundant, which I'm sure you use to set up your business, but without that, would it have happened?
It probably wouldn't have happened as soon as possible, but I had always had the idea in my head that, again, as I said, like by the time I'm 60 down by the sea, I want to open something. So yeah, I'm glad I've had the opportunity to do it now, but it probably would have happened in the future. I even remember, to be honest, like when again, not to segue too much again, but Celia, my wife, and I went to Asia for about 3 months, actually, whilst I was working at HS2, about 3 months, maybe 2 months. And they got a replacement for me whilst I was gone. And there was one time we were in Lao, at the very top of Lao, and we had to do a stopover, and we basically were just trying to wash our clothes in the hotel, and then we were going to carry on. And we were just sitting in a cafe. There was nothing else to do there, and I had a scrap of paper with me. I thought, you know what, actually, this is what I want to do. I want to do this. I'm going to... So I sketched... I probably got it somewhere still here. I just sketched what I thought a shop might look like and how I would set it up. And I just thought, yeah, I want to do that when I get back. But when I got back, I think there was maybe another 3 or 4 years of being at HS2. And like you say, though, I think that without the push of taking the redundancy, because I was so comfortable at HS2, I probably wouldn't have done it anytime soon. But I doubt, first of all, I don't think HS2 is going to exist as a company until I was 60 anyway. Well, who knows anyway. Eventually I would have done it, but just this gave me the opportunity to do it earlier. Definitely having the finances and the comfort of knowing that if it didn't go well, heaven forbid, that I wouldn't be on the streets kind of thing. But then again, that also comes with the fact that I've got close family and like friends and stuff that I can rely on, that I don't feel like, oh God, if anything went wrong, I'm on the streets.
Yeah. And what, from a logistical point of view, so someone else is maybe listening to this thinking, I want to go alone, or I've got a bit of redundancy money coming, doesn't matter what industry. How did you go about the practical stuff, the registering the company's house, knowing what you have to register, knowing how to start a business legally? Because if you've never done it,
there's a lot going on. So luckily for me, without sounding like silver spoon pretentious, both my parents have always run their own businesses. Okay. So I just asked my dad.
That's a good tip, generally. Yeah. Find someone who's done it and go and ask them. Which is
exactly. Just find someone who's done it. And also, like, once you actually find out like the certain things you have to do, like registering for companies' house is a really easy process. I think what was the most difficult one? The one that gave me the most headache, I guess, was trying to get a business bank account.
Okay.
Not because it was difficult to do, but just because I didn't realize that there was a difference between, I didn't know there were two different banks. I thought it was just bank accounts. And actually, funny enough, it's not that this is a sponsorship for this company, but Tide was all over the underground. Like when I first started thinking, oh yeah, I need to get an account. Well, Tide, the advertising was everywhere. First, I was like, okay, fine. So, but yeah, like other than that, like.
What about finding a premises? Because obviously, to be honest.
Yeah. So I was going to say, finding a premises. So I'd, when I left HS2, I worked in a Japanese restaurant for a little while just because I wanted to know how, because I'd already decided I was going to open a shop or open a shop of some kind. So one of my friends is a manager of a Japanese restaurant. He said, well, if you come here and you want to work here for a little while, also they had a coffee machine, because I'd never done any service industry stuff. So they had a coffee machine, but he said, because it's a Japanese restaurant, no one really wants coffee. So if you want to come and just basically practice on the machine whilst you're not serving people, then by all means, it makes sense. I was like, yeah, great, fine. It gives me something to do, and also I can practice coffee. But after doing that, just before that, I'd managed to get into a local market in an area that wasn't too far from my house. And one thing I would say to any of your listeners out there, that if you have a physical product, obviously it's a bit different if you're like a web development company or whatever. If you have a physical product and you're selling something, I would say just take it to your local market. Honestly, there's nothing more useful than having people who have no vested interest in you tell you what they think about your product, because your friends and family, even if they want to say mean stuff about what you're doing, they're going to sugarcoat it slightly. If you are selling it to people and your friends and family might be some of your customers, but they're not going to be your customers forever, you need to be able to sell to the local as a public. You need to have good customer services in order to like win people over to sell your product. And you need to be able to like tell people why they need your product. It's not good enough just to say. Essentially, if you don't want to sell to people and the public, you've got a hobby. You haven't got a business. And having a hobby is fine, but I think you need to step out of your comfort zone if you want to start having a business rather than just having a hobby. The way I managed to find the property actually is I was doing this market, and as I was doing it, just down the road from where the market was being held, I kept seeing this shop, and the shop was always closed. It was so close to the train station, tiny little shop, and I was like, that shop is always closed. It used to be a record shop, and they sold records, and I think they may have done I think they did a little bit of coffee, but I never saw it open. It was like a good, what, 2 months of me being at the at this market, and it never was open. So I kept looking online, seeing who's managing the shop. No one's ever there. Called the number. No one's ever there. And then we were about to go to America for my wife's cousin's wedding. And I just happened to be Googling. I don't know what I was doing. I just happened to be Googling properties in the area. And I saw it pop up. I was like, oh, it's up for rent. We're going to America in like about 2 days, but I need to, I want to look at this.
Oh,
so I called the guy and I was like, okay, can I come and have a viewing now? He's like, I've got viewings tomorrow. Can you come do a viewing? I was like, I can't, I'm not going to be here. Can I just come and do a viewing now? If I like it, I'll just give the deposit now. And then obviously I'll take it back if anything, but I want to see it now. And again, luckily for me, my sister does property law. So she came with me because I basically was like, I was ready just to say yes immediately. And she was like, Matthew, let's wait a second. There's damp over here. There's this wall needs replacing, so and so. I'm like, oh, yeah, you're right. Okay. So can I say yes later? Or So I ended up going back and forth for a long time. The clock's still ticking because obviously we booked our flights already. We have to go. And we went back the next day with my sister, and we managed to get the landlord on the phone. We looked at the contract. There were a few things that we wanted to change, so amended the contract a bit. We both sat down and like figured out, me, ourselves, and the landlord both looked at the contract and said, yeah, it's fine, and then signed on it. And then we went to America, and I came back, and I was like, oh my God, what have I done? So, and it was cool. So, yeah, we opened up. I took the property in November. I got the keys, November 2017. I don't know, were we in 2000? 6 years ago, basically.
It would have been about that time, yeah.
Yeah, 2017, November. Yeah. I took the keys and I opened the shop in January 2018, on the 20th, I think, yeah.
Well, obviously, I've been to the shop, and it's a thriving shop and stuff like that. And obviously, you do lots of cases, and I'll tell you to plug it in a second. But just generally, the first kind of few weeks, months, was it slow? Was it tough? Was it like, oh my God, what am I doing?
It was
near a station, so you've got
it's near to a station. Also, when I opened up the shop, there wasn't really anything else in the area. So I think that essentially what's happened with the area at the moment is that it's going through a state of I'm gonna use the dirty G word, but gentrification essentially. And there are sometimes people coming like, oh, this area is becoming very gentrified. What do you think? I'm like, I own a vegan cupcake shop, so it's probably, I'm probably not the best person to talk to about.
Wasn't vegan at the time, was it?
Well, it wasn't. This is it, actually. You're right. So basically, when I first opened up, it wasn't vegan. It was just that I had one vegan flavor and I had 8 cupcakes on. And people kept asking me, oh, this is delicious, this vegan one. Do you have any other flavors? I was like, I don't, but I can. And so at the end of the first week, I was like, I need to try and figure out how to do more vegan flavors. And I think by the end of the second week, I'd managed to figure out how to do all of them vegan, apart from chocolate and banana cake. And obviously banana cake, I could probably get away with, but like a chocolate cake is difficult. It's like not having it. I needed to figure out. So eventually I figured out. So yeah, then I just thought, you know what? People can't tell. It's as long as the cake is good. It doesn't need. No one needs to know that it's vegan and vegan.
Well, I've had vegan cakes and I can never tell.
Is it? Like vegan people will ask, and people who aren't vegan don't care as long as it tastes good. So that's essentially what I end up doing. So now the entire shop's vegan, just as a business choice. Also, I was quite smug during the egg shortage. I was like, must be tough.
If you could give 3 tips to people that potentially were thinking about their own business and stuff, what would it be? And there's a couple of things you've already said, so I don't want you to say them. So I think what I've got from you is obviously have a level of like investment or money there, because you will need to invest in your business and stuff. But at the same time, have enough if it doesn't go right, so you're not on the streets.
Yeah.
2, go to experts, your dad, for example, for the company, and your sister for the property thing.
Yeah. Because
God help, if you had gone into that property,
I would have signed immediately. It would be ridiculous.
You would have used all your money fixing the dampness and stuff like that. But apart from those 2 things, what else would you, what tips would you give?
I would definitely say, again, like with a physical product, I definitely would say go to market. That's, I know as I've said that already, but I probably would say that is the most important piece of advice I can give anyone who is doing a physical product. don't just rely on the fact that your parents and your family and your friends say it's good. Mm. You can't rely on that. That's not going to be good enough in the long run.
If it's a food thing, then just literally like trying to get a stall in a one day market or something like that.
Exactly. I mean, the amount of village markets or whatever, especially if you're in London, there are billions of them around here. I'm assuming that if you're outside of London, there must be like some kind of...
There must be still some.
There are markets everywhere you can do all the time.
Doing the appointments all the time.
The second one I would say, going back to HS2 stuff, would be that make sure your digital presence is robust. It doesn't have to be like the most flashy thing in the world. I mean, my website is very nice. I did it myself. But again, it's just there. It's a signpost for getting people to where they actually need to be. All of my orders are done bespokely, so it's not... it might be different for other people's like kind of businesses, but my one is that it signposts you to how to talk to me or whoever's taking your order, and then we create whatever it is from there.
I'll go one more step on that as well to just make sure like the Google listings and stuff like that.
Absolutely.
Because actually, for you especially, like I can imagine I'm going to ask you where your shop is and the name and something, but I know it's right near a station, and sometimes if it happened to me the other day where I just missed the train slightly, and there was literally the station was like, it was in the middle of nowhere really, nothing really around, and I had about half an hour to kill, so I just went on Google Maps to see what's around here, and I was literally looking for a coffee shop, a pub, or just somewhere. It was also very cold, it was raining, and there was no real shade in there, or no shelter. There was a pub just around the corner, very close. I couldn't see it from where I was and the way I'd come in. I just went in there, sat in there for 20 minutes, had a pint, was warm, and then got the train. So it kind of just, Google was my savior. I wouldn't have known that was there. So
absolutely.
That sort of stuff is
amazing as well, isn't it? Yeah, no, visibility, I mean, like not just digital visibility, but eventually if you do have something physical, then physical visibility as well.
On digital.
On digital and visibility. Like no one, in this day and age as well, there's so many other people out there who are your competitors. I'll swing back around to that in a second. There's some people out there who are your competitors. You need to kind of make some kind of way of standing out. Whether that's by standing out as being so super niche and such a luxury thing that you don't necessarily need to be competing with, I don't know, Audi or Greggs or whatever it is. Or just if you're trying to compete with those kind of people, then you need to constantly be on it. You need to really be hammering out there. The other thing, what was I going to say?
That was two things.
So the other thing, just really quickly about competitors, is that other people might be doing what you're doing, but they're not doing it like you're doing it, if that makes sense. I know it sounds really cheesy and American, but it's, if you think your business is good, if you think that your product is good, and if you think that, and if it's working as a product and people are buying it, don't focus on what Joe is doing, if he's doing the same thing. It doesn't matter, because one, you can't stop him doing it, and two, you're going to waste so much energy and so much mind space trying to figure out what's their next move, rather than trying to figure out
That's really good tips, actually. That's really good tips. And just finally, tell me about your business. Where is it? What is it? What's it called? What do you do?
So it is essentially a bespoke cake shop. I am head baker. I have two staff, which is lovely now. They're very good. The shop.
I remember when you opened and you got your poor wife, who's a teacher. A senior.
Wow. You're bringing out all the shade now,
She, bless her, she was helping you. And
trying to, I've got a picture.
You can't afford to pay anyone then, can you?
I could barely afford to pay one now. So I'm done.
Well, yeah, fine. But even less then.
It was nice. It was, opening the shop. I remember that on the first day as well, after being open on the first day. And we sold out on the first day.
Wow.
And I remember looking at CD and going, that was incredible. But also thinking to myself, oh, crap, this is it. I've got to,
So tell me where the shop is, what it is.
It's a cake shop. I specialize in making cupcakes and vegan birthday cakes and wedding cakes and that kind of stuff. I also do a little bit of bread and pastries. It's basically a small, the way I describe it is a micro bakery. It's in South Nord, which is next to a train station called Nord Junction, which is SE25.
Crystal Palace in that area.
Yeah, basically it's where, if you're a Palace supporter, if you're a football person, it's where you'd get off in order to go to the Palace home games.
What's it called? What's it called?
Walnuts and Honey.
Cool.
Yeah.
And obviously, I've been there. I mean, I think you've got to work on the sales pitch a little bit, if I'm honest. But you obviously do coffees and teas and cupcakes, and you've got some seating area as well. Mm. I remember when I came down after, ironically, Palace Arsenal. I think it was a Saturday in January. I was doing dry January, so it was actually perfect. Yeah. And all my mates after the game went to the pub. I was like, I'm not going to join you today. I'll see you next time. I've got somewhere to go. And then I came and I sat in there for a couple of hours, had about five different flavour cupcakes.
Yeah, I remember you ate a lot of cake. A
couple of chai lattes that I loved and stuff like that. So people can sit in there as well. Yeah. There's a couple of tables and stuff. And it's perfect for if you're waiting for the train or you're just in the area for half an hour.
Yeah.
And any plans with it, or is it just kind of keep it going?
I think at the moment, the thing that I'm kind of focusing on is trying to take more of a managerial role rather than taking such a hands-on role. So this year I'm focusing on trying to hire people and try and find basically people who are good enough to take it forward.
Would you ever want another place, another premises, another second?
Possibly, yeah. I mean, like, it sounds like, again, like, I really also want, like, I want to retire by the seaside as well, so do I take maybe it with me, or do second. I leave it there? So
that could be your second premises.
Maybe. Exactly.
Matthew, it's been great, I think, talking to you. I think, I knew the journey from the end of the HS2 thing. I mean, you were HS2 7-8 years. I was only there a year and a half. So, I was
Jeez, long at all.
Yeah, about a year and a half, maybe just under 2 years. So I kind of, I didn't know the Parliament story, so I've learned that you poisoned David Cameron, didn't know that. It's fascinating talking to you, and hopefully your advice and tips will help others thinking about it.
So,
if anyone's ever in the sort of Norwood Junction area, they know where to come.
Yeah, I'm also on Deliveroo, so by all means, if you're in South East London in general, there you go,
even better, perfect. Cool. Well, awesome. Thank you, and yeah, good luck.
All right, thank you very much, dude. See you. Bye.
And that's a wrap. Thanks for listening to this podcast brought to you by Let's Make a Difference. I was your host, Akhil Vyas. Please do follow us on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook. Just search Let's Make a Difference. I think it's Let's Make a Difference Together on Instagram. You'll find us. There are also links in the description below. Please do subscribe on Spotify, Apple, or whatever that your choice of platform is for podcasts. Thank you. Have a great day, and speak to you soon.